Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your mummy when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When a system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, it's your brother Ramir Deese. Welcome to this Class War Battlefield podcast episode. I'm doing this episode less for the broad public and more for ideas that I think it's time needs to be, these ideas really need to be put out for white folks to consider and for non-white folks to consider, because I'm tired of having conversations that lead nowhere, that have no meaning, that resolve nothing. It's time to talk about some stark revelations that I've come to realize when it comes to race in this country and throughout this world. First, ladies and gentlemen, I grew up among white folks. In fact, I was the type of black man whom, as a child, I was constantly told, you do not act black, you do not act black, you do not act black. Now, it's so funny, because when I was a kid, I used to think of that as a positive thing. I would say, thank you very much, you know, that's nice, blah, blah, blah. I cannot recall the first time when I actually switched over, but I think I was in college when I switched over to finally asking, what does that mean? Because when I was in college, I was about 25 years old. I had just turned 25, in fact. And somebody told me I don't act black. And I stopped and I looked at them and I said, what do you mean? And they go, you know what I mean. You don't act black. You know, you don't do the whole yo-yo, homie low thing and blah, blah, blah. And I go, well, no, I don't act that way because I wasn't raised that way. Why would I act that way? I'm black. I'm not stupid. And then it dawned on me that people from the time that I was young, when I was a kid, they equated black with being stupid. Kids used to say this to me. Young white kids, they equated black with being stupid. Well, they obviously picked it up from their parents. Obviously, right? I mean, it's not as if kids being around other kids for 8 hours a day might somehow possibly give cultural cues to each other. Over the past couple of years, really the last 6 years, I've changed. in my understanding of race and racism and how I, what I think about it, how I feel about it, whom I would call a racist, whom I wouldn't. I am very particular when I call somebody racist. For this reason, I haven't called anybody an actual racist in a long time. Just like I'm very particular when I call a person white. White may be a mindset, as one of my elders said, but it's also a culture. I try to refer to those people of European ancestry who live in America as European Americans. It's hard because in my day-to-day life, whenever I say that, you know, most European Americans ask me, wait, I'm not, you know, why you call me a European American? I'm not from Europe. Then I wonderfully explain to them, yes, you are. It's kind of ironic. There's a lot of people who really hate that phrase, and among them are my Trump-supporting friends. They hate being referred to as European Americans. I'm an American. You're not. You're not. You're not even close to an American. You are European American, and even then, you know, I'd still call you just a European. But I'm very particular about that. I'm very particular because whiteness actually has a definitive, distinctive genetical sequence, which most Europeans do not fit. They do not fit it. That's stated. Let me explain to you a couple of realities that I wrestle with. First reality. In understanding that about 70% of Europeans are racists, have a white supremacy complex that pushes them into the realm of being active, definable racists, who work hard to sabotage and to interrupt the progression of anyone non-white or non-European. Or more bluntly, non-albinist. ...70% of the population. Where do I get those numbers from? Intuition. From dealing with white folks, from being around white folks all my life. 70% of them I can't change. They're gone. This stretches beyond one generation or another. It is just across the board, generation after generation after generation. These people are who they are. They're not changing. Of the 30% left out of the entire European population, half are uneasy with white supremacy, and thus they are not racists to the extent that they have tendencies which one might contribute to racism. It is all cultural for them. They have learned to live like the other 70%. If they could, they would live in a more harmonious world. Now, I must admit, because I'm going to be fair here, that out of the 70% that I prescribed, that I described earlier, probably 25% of them choose to be racists. They had the opportunity to not be racist, and I don't know how to really explain that outside of they believe in the beauty of whiteness and the European race. And yet they didn't necessarily for some time believe in the inferiority of other races. They just believed in the beauty of European race, which is fine. But somewhere along the way, they chose to be racist. And the question always is then, well, can you change them back? Is there a way to change them back? And frankly, I don't have enough time in my life to worry about that. So I group them in with the other, what would it be? The other 75% of the 70%. Yeah, yes. By the way, for those of you who haven't been in a math class for a long time, yeah, you're going to get a refresher on dealing with percentages here. Of the 30%, though, 50% of those people will never be racist ever in their life. It is impossible for them to even think in terms of white supremacy and racism. These are the ones that are beaten down horribly by the rest of European society. Because they show clear humanitarian instinct. They show clear humanitarian instinct. Now, because of the way that the other 50% of the 30% think, I count those as being, you know, persuadable. You can persuade them not to be white supremacists and to be racist. They are more likely to fall on the line of not being racist and having serious qualms with white supremacy. But because of the fact that they are so fluid with their culture, these are the type of people who could be very radical in their 20s, only to become conservative white supremacists in their 50s. They're also, from the other end, you know, I talked about the 25% and 70%, those type of people are the types that start off as the white supremacists in their teenage years, in their 20s, only to evolve into anti-white supremacists in their 40s. Sometimes earlier. I'd like to say, you know, truthfully, I would love to say that 50% of the European population can be helped. But from my experiences, from what I see, what I've read, yeah, it's more about 30%. And that's just something that I've had to deal with. Now, I know there's going to be many black folks who don't agree. There's going to be many white folks who definitely don't agree. But trust me, these are not numbers that I've come up with easily. It's not as if I woke up when I was 10 and said 70% of Europeans are just garbage. No, in fact, when I was 10, I took the approach that most people, probably 98% of people, could be changed. And I held that view probably until my late 20s. And then I scaled it back a little bit and said, most people, maybe 90% of people, could be changed. But as I've really understood the problems that went into creating this society, went into creating the European, went into creating the African, went into creating the conflict between the two, I realize it's just, it's a bigger issue. It's a, the numbers are far less than what I wanted them to be. It's a bigger issue than I appreciated back then. So it's difficult, but it's a fact that has to be dealt with. Now, you may, especially if you're a European American, you may find problems with this, especially because scientists, European scientists, have now come up with the idea that all the, you know, people are walking around with all these unconscious biases. I don't buy half of that. I believe that what European scientists are calling unconscious biases are unconscious biases. They're lies. That they're just catching Europeans lying. Sitting in classrooms taught by white teachers, I, by the way, just to let you know, I went to a school where I didn't have a single non-white teacher. In fact, up until my ninth grade year, I didn't see black people or non-white people working in any capacity in the school that I went to outside of assistance. And when I say assistance, I'm not talking teacher's assistance. I'm talking cafeteria help. And the first person that I saw who was black who worked there, I didn't see them until I was in junior high. Yep, junior high. Now, my mother used to volunteer in for kindergarten and stuff, but they kind of pushed her out, and then it was nobody. So I had nothing back then but white teachers. And in fact, when I went to college, I had nothing but white teachers. So, or professors. So, I've had a lot of experience, especially as I've reflected back, I've had a lot of experience with teachers telling their students when it was okay to lie. And I, you know, being young and naive, didn't think anything of it, but as I've looked back on it, I'm looking at it and going, wait a minute, they're telling these kids to lie. And it's okay to lie. It's okay to be two or three or four different people. So I'm confident that a lot of this, you know, subconscious, yada, 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 it's just, it's you're catching these people lying. They've gotten good with lying. And so when you give them the brain scans, you're actually catching the lies. Think about it. You're told as a young person that these thoughts that you have had most of your life are wrong. You do one of two things. You either reject the fact that they're wrong, or you cover up for them. You learn to lie and say that you believe the opposite of what you're actually saying. And I've had a lot of friends who have done that, who've admitted that they've done that. These are just truths. These are just truths. Now, when I start to have conversations like this with people who I know, the first thing that most European Americans say is that they're surprised that I've always felt this way. And as I always tell them, I haven't always felt this way. I've come to these conclusions. And then the second thing that they always ask me is, well, do you think I'm a racist? Do you think I hate black people? You know, you've known me all my life. Do you think this, that, that, or this? And, you know, then I have to break their hearts and say, that ain't for me to decide. That's for you to decide. The validation principle there, that's the reason why I brought it up, allows white folks to keep up the lies to themselves and to the rest of society. And to feel good about it. And to not feel any kind of remorse about it. A few weeks back, I was thinking, I was reading on the New Deal. And I realized something. And this is something that black people need to contend with. Because it has frightening implications for the future. Especially as we might be looking at another Great Depression. In a time period when the nation was experiencing drastic scarcity, European Americans refused to give up their ideology of European and white supremacy in America. At a time period when black folks were willing to come together for the betterment of the country, most European Americans wouldn't give up their right to feel superior and to use that superiority against black folks, sometimes often in violent means and violent ways, but also to deprive black communities of federal monies and federal supplies that would have helped ease the pain of many black citizens. We often don't talk about this aspect of the Great Depression. We don't. And I knew this when I was reading through information on the Great Depression. I already knew this. In fact, when Colin Kaepernick was raising Cain by kneeling, and a friend of mine took great exception to it, saying that he was being disrespectful to people who had fought for this country, I quickly reminded them that black folks had fought for this country during times when we were being called niggers and we could be lynched for even wearing our uniform on the streets of America. He didn't know that. Most European Americans don't have any clue about black patriotism and what we have spent in this country to love this country. That's just what we do, I guess. But to black Americans, what I would tell you now is we need to stop doing that. This country is going to have to make up its mind. Either it wants us or it doesn't. People have great solidarity with black folks when, you know, they could take up a hashtag and stand with this person who has been dead who has been killed and who is now dead. But when we talk about economic empowerment in the black community, which will require investments, untethered investments by white communities who have taken liberties in our community to take out tons of resources, to take out the brightest minds in order to train them for their benefit. When we talk like that, suddenly no hashtag trends. Suddenly European Americans don't want anything to do with black folks. At least the majority of them who are making these hashtags trend. Ask them to show up for a 2.3 mile run or jog. You get dozens, hundreds of them doing it. But to ask them to show up, to pull their parents along, to talk about economic realities and how suburbs can help revitalize black communities for black people's benefits, you get a couple of people at those meetings. There's something wrong with European society. And, you know, you've been able to fool people into believing otherwise, believing that you're the perfect society and that you have a lot to teach the world about building societies. But more and more people are waking up to the fact that, no, Europe, Eurasia, you can't build societies. You suck at it. And you suck at it because you keep letting the same people build your societies who have but one vision. Hierarchical, top-down, authoritarian-minded societies. That's what they want. That's what they build. Well, unfortunately, that's not what the majority of the world wants. When you look at imperialism through the eyes of cultural contrast, what you see is an authoritarian group of people who have an over-inflated sense of self, an over-inflated sense of divinity against people who are, yes, really, really 100% socialistic, commonwealth-oriented, cooperative-oriented, whose divinity is in self and relationship to each other, or in the self's relationship to each other and to nature and to the great whole, the cosmic world. You have a distortion of God when it comes to Europe. You have a distortion of God when it comes to Europe. God is unfamiliar. God is neglectful. God is authoritarian. He's punishing, destructive, war-hungry, bloodthirsty. God is the end-all, be-all, who cannot be challenged, who is rarely personified. This is a distortion of divinity. God doesn't even have a wife in Europe. I mean, for God's sakes. How is that even possible? Even in the ancient worlds for Europe, even Zeus had some concubines. I think he might have even had a wife. And yet, Christian God is a bachelor, no wife. I mean, even the Jewish concept of God had a wife. You had to look, but she was there. Even Muslims' concept of God has a wife. You gotta look, but she's there. And yes, I know about the whole Madonna thing and the Catholic Church and stuff, but the wider belief was that God did not have a wife. When you went and you looked at these other civilizations, they had wives. Their gods had wives. Completely read that wrong. But their gods had wives. Women in the divine pantheons played immense roles. And often they were considered more powerful than the men, which is understandable because in nature and in the natural realm of humanity, women are the birth givers. They are the connection, the portal to the ancestral realm. They are the true creators. So yes, they would be more powerful than men. Men provide, obviously, the source. They connect to the rivers of life. But women are connected to the portals. This cooperative aspect of God, God with wife, goddess, who was as powerful, sometimes even more powerful than the God himself, with children, who were quite a bit away from the Creator. The Creator was an entirely different being altogether. But that God, that God and goddess and child or children usually had other gods and goddesses and children that they had to be in harmony and balance with. This created a mythology that pulled together the tribe, multiple families, and often pulled together the tribe with other tribes because they could see beyond the self, even as exhibited by the tribe. Because if the God, who had a family, had to get along with other gods who also had families. Why then wouldn't the tribe, one large family, have to get along with another family, another tribe? That's what happens when you distort God in your culture. But if I could be honest, I'm not surprised. I shouldn't be anyway. And neither should you. Because Europeans are a battered people. They are an abused people. They were trapped behind the ice, supposedly. And that was how they turned white. Obviously, the Kaji tell a different story. They say little brother, who was white, was born to them and didn't respect Mother Nature and got sent away. A story which is repeated in Africa. If Europeans, in their present state, truthfully were created by being trapped behind the ice, what would it do to you in your mind if you went from living in a place which was lush, well, maybe not as lush as some of the forests, but, you know, it had a lot of vegetation, provided a good, sturdy, nutritional base for you, your family, your tribe. And then suddenly, within a few years, ice and snow and life became difficult. Would you not have a different view of God than somebody who was living in tropical weather? I would think you would have a very different view of God. If you compound this problem by adding to it that you ended up in Europe, because let's say you were light-skinned anyway, you ended up in Europe because you couldn't stand being in the African heat. You were lighter skinned, albino. So they sent you to Europe where you wouldn't be burned. And then you get trapped behind the ice. Do you maybe think that you would have some abandonment issues? Because truthfully, looking at the history of Europeans, it kind of does scream abandonment. There was a black psychiatrist who passed away some years back. And I watched an interview that she did on the old Phil Donahue show back in the early 90s, where she suggested that one of the major difficulties that Europeans have to overcome is self-hatred. She was ridiculed widely for that assertion, that Europeans really did not like themselves. I watched this interview back in 2015. And this assertion that Europeans did not like themselves rung very true to me. Why? Because again, I say this, and I mean this. I grew up around mostly European Americans, white folks. And I cannot tell you from when I was in seventh grade, I noticed it a lot more. From the time I was in seventh grade to about the time I was in 12th grade, maybe even 11th grade, the number of my white friends who would say, I wish I were black. And, you know, now that I really think about it, it wasn't just my friends. My sister hung out with mostly white boys and white girls, and the majority of them, so, well, not the majority, but many of them said the same thing, that they wished they were, that they wished they were black. And it didn't stop when we left school, it kept going. It kept going. I had people telling me that until my early 30s. Europeans have to learn to love themselves, or else they can love nobody else. But it's a little bit late for that. It really is a little bit late for that. I am meeting many, what we would call colored, back in the day. They aren't black, but they're supposedly mixed race. Most of them wouldn't pass what they used to call the paper bag test, where if you hold the paper bag up to their face and they're lighter than the paper bag, then they would pass for white. But if they're darker, then they would not. Most of these people would not pass that test. But I'm seeing a new generation of these folks being born, and now obviously much older. In the capacities that I'm actually witnessing them in. And many of them show the same destructive negativity towards black folks, especially the ones who have white hair and have more European-friendly features. They have a destructive disdain for black folks. They really think they're better. So that's going to definitely be something that's going to have to be dealt with in the future. But until then, I'm your brother Vimer Adis. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, you can always contact me. This was not an easy episode, but it was one that was necessary. Let me know what you think, guys. Radio4all.net. You can contact me through radio, the number 4all.net. Until the next time, y'all. I'll see you then. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again: how the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments